Welcome to Tunnel Talk, a no facts, all feelings wrestling podcast. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Leah.
And how has everybody's week been? Spake she expectantly.
I'll let you go first, actually.
Oh, yeah, well, let Ann field this one, yeah.
Well, Allie, today was better than yesterday because I didn't wake up in the middle of the night with a bat in my bedroom. So that was a big win for me.
Ann's little bat experience this week occupied the group chat for, I would say, hours on end. Hours and hours. Tell us about it.
Yeah.
Walk us through it.
Yeah, it was fun. So it was very cold here, and then it warmed up, and it was like stormy. So it sounded like the wind was quite loud outside, and so I kind of half woke up and was like, "The wind sounds weird, but whatever." And like kind of went back to sleep, and then I woke up again. I was like, "The wind sounds like really weird. Like, why does it kind of sound like there's something in here?" And I turned on the light. And it turned out the reason was that there was something in there, and it was a bat, and it started flying around. It was in my bedroom, flying around at like head level in like small circles, trying to find a way out. And I don't usually like panic, and I see a mouse, I don't scream, whatever. But yeah,
a surprise bat in the middle of the night will get you. I mean, there's no way around it. It's not when you want to experience a creature.
No, it's not. And not like kind of coming at your head, you know, and you kind of don't know what
swoop.
To do.
They swoop. Yeah.
There's some swooping involved. So I'm freaking out and like shrieking. Like the dog is staring at me like, what's happening? I finally like realize like, because it's like, what do I do? I finally like, I open the door to my bedroom. Luckily this bat is like desperately looking for a way out. So it like flies right out of the room and into like the guest room. And so I slam the door of my room shut. And then I'm like, oh my God. And then I'm like, wait, I should shut the guest room door. So I go out and shut the guest room door, and I shut my door, and it's like 5 a.m. So I'm like, well, I'll call animal control, I guess, at 8, you know, like, I don't know. So I tried to go back to sleep, which was not very successful. And anyway, call animal control, like, get up, go downstairs. Like, the bat does not, you know, the guest room door is shut. The bat does not appear
safely
to be anywhere
contained.
On the main level. I'm like, great. It's stuck in the bedroom. Like, the guy, animal control is going to come. We'll take care of this. So then I like let the dog out, whatever. And then I'm like, I'm going to use the bathroom in the downstairs bathroom, open the door. I'm like, you know, like you're like reaching for your pants. And then you're like, shit, I like looked in the toilet. There is a bat in the toilet. I like shriek again, like race out, jump out of the room, like slam that door shut. And then I'm like, oh my God, like, how did the bat get in there? Like, is it the same bat? Like, and I'm like, it must be dead in the toilet, I guess. But then I like open the door to see, and then its little head just like kind of lifts up and looks at me in the toilet, slam that shut. And
then I
get like a towel to put like under the door frame, because now I'm Googling a lot about bats. I'm much
they can get anywhere.
Bats. They can get anywhere. They can crawl
they can
through
get anywhere.
The space of a dime, the internet told me. So,
the space of a dime?
Yes. Wow. They said a hole the size of the dime a bat can get in. So
that is explaining some stuff about bats I have encountered in the past. I'll tell you that. That is making sense. Space of a dime.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up. Yeah, so so I put a little towel under the door, but then my desk is like right next to the door to the bathroom, like even to my house. So it was not like the most peaceful morning. I had a 9 a.m. work meeting where they heard a lot about it, and the pharmacists in that meeting were like, you have to get a rabies shot because bats' teeth are so small that they can bite you in your sleep and you wouldn't even know it or be able to see it, which is
now, can I
terrifying.
Raise a question? Are bats more likely to have rabies, or is it just the tooth issue that is why we freak out about rabies with bats?
It might be some of each, but it like from what I saw online, it was like bats are like one of the biggest transmitters of rabies to humans. So,
and guys, you don't want to get rabies.
No, it's 100%.
You can listen to a great This American Life episode about it.
Yeah, the symptoms don't show up for months. So you have to like get post-exposure prophylactic treatment if you get the bat. So anyway, then I finally call a private company. The guy's like, it's in the toilet. He sounded very surprised, which I was. And I was like, I know, right?
Well, why did it go in there? You know, what were you trying to achieve, buddy? Leave the house. Sir, you're not welcome. Simply leave the house.
If you want a drink, there's like a lot of dog bowls around the house and stuff. So I don't know what happened there. But at least it didn't seem to be able to get out of the toilet, because it did remain there for the remainder of its time with me until it was retrieved by a man who initially suggested flushing it. Which to me,
well, I guess if they can fit through a space the size of a now, I'm not suggesting that you should have flushed it. I think it's good that you didn't flush the bat, that has made me think about it in a new light.
Yeah. I did have sympathy for one of our friends who suggested that maybe this man had a deal with the local plumber where, like, they send each other business. So he's like, yeah, flush the bat. And then call my friend Sonny.
Right. He'll deal with that issue. No problem. Oh, God. But yeah, but the man who came, he was very like an old country Kentucky guy, but he went in there without any equipment or gloves or anything and got the bat out of the toilet and into like a clear plastic jar to show me it was still alive.
And he wasn't worried about getting bit by bat.
No, he was like, you know, you only get rabies if they bite you. And it was like, well, barehanded. Seems like that's a risk.
I guess he assumed that the bat was limp from swimming for hours.
I mean, which I think was right, probably. Yeah. But I don't even know if he like grabbed it with his bare hand or if he used the jar, but there was no water in the jar. So I don't know.
I think he grabbed it. Unless he scooped it. He must have touched the bat. He certainly touched it.
Now, Anne, you showed the group chat a picture of the bat in the in the Tupperware. What did we, your dear friends, immediately do?
Yeah, so I'll explain the Tupperware thing. So basically, like, I called the health department who will test the bat for rabies, and if the bat does not have rabies, I don't have to get shot. So
And they test the bat, and then they release it to a farm, right? Yeah, where it lives out the rest of its happy bat life.
That is what I told you guys. Yes.
I'm sure what you were told as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we transferred the living bat, to a Tupperware container that the animal control man like poked holes in, and so it's on my counter for like an hour while I'm waiting for the health department to call me back. And I took a little video of it for the group chat, who were immediately like, "He's so cute. Let's name
him. We love bat. That's our little baby. That's our new son. That's your little baby bat son.
We loved him.
My enemy who tried to give me rabies from within the toilet.
He didn't mean to. He was just scared. And are we not all so often scared in this life?
He didn't have a good morning either.
He had a really bad morning.
He's just a little guy.
No.
He's just a little guy. He swooped because he's frightened, you know? Yeah.
I mean, the warm weather woke him up from his hibernation. He accidentally went down. The animal control man thinks he got in through the chimney and like got confused and crawled down. And so then he swooped a shrieking woman and then fell in a toilet. So it wasn't. Yeah. And then he got taken to the health department to be rabies tested.
And now he's on a farm and he's alive. I wouldn't worry about that.
Wouldn't worry about it.
So we all had an exciting week. Of course, Anne had to live through it, but we got to read about it, which was better.
We made quite a lot of memes about our
sweet cornhole
stone. Cole the bat.
I'm so sorry. This is the best thing I've ever read, but I am sorry for your pain.
And is that not what a group chat is for? Sometimes you have to be the person experiencing the pain, but most of the time you're just reading about it and cornholing. That's how we sustain each other. That's how we give back to each other. You contributed to your community this week.
That's right. And you're welcome. It was my pleasure.
Thank you.
Not really.
It was my life.
I was so awake and alive yesterday. I've had this RSV like this whole week and not feeling good. But yesterday I felt great because I was like, I had enough adrenaline that I could have like run away from a lion. And then today, like the crash, like I felt so terrible in my body. I was like, well, this is the bat. What were we saying? The bathromath?
The bathromath.
We're kind of still workshopping this.
Oh, yeah. We went to afterbat. This is the afterbat. Oh, my gosh. Well, Leah, can you top that?
You know what? I can't.
You can't? No bats this week?
No. The only creatures in my house that swooped me are the ones I specifically invited to live here. So.
You invited them. You sustain them. You are their mother. Yeah. Just as Anne is mother to Cole, wherever he may be.
To Cole the bat.
Oh,
when I handed him in his Tupperware to the woman at the lab, she said, oh. It's like... Well, you enjoy that.
They're always cuter when they're in Tupperware. That sounds psychopathic. I'm sorry I said that. I take it back.
I think that's right. I think that everybody's cuter when I keep them in their Tupperware.
I wish I could be in a little Tuppyware. That is not... Okay, well, we've got to get to the wrestling. So let's copalopin this episode Yes, Leah?
Should we do a little mini game where every segment we decide how they would handle it if a bat flew into
Oh my God. I really do encourage, everybody to contribute those thoughts throughout the episode. That's a good game. Okay. Well, we're starting with Little Coppola Open, as Tony Schiavone said. We're just going to quick talk about what's been going on with Adam Copeland. Now, did everybody know this but me? I thought that the Cope Open, I guess because the first time I saw it, he was opening. So I was like, okay, it's the Cope Open. He gets his microphone, does a little opening promo. He does a little opening match. I get it. Then the next time I saw it, he was not opening the show. He was the second thing in the show, but they still called it the Cope Open. I thought, that's funny. Good for them, though. This week on Dynamite, he main events, and they're like, time for the Cope Open. I said, it's literally the close. I believe what has gone wrong here. I missed the origin of the Cope Open, and it is an open challenge, not opening the show. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Well, that's fucking stupid. Mine is more, I think, instinctively what you would think was happening.
Yeah, and I've missed Rampage and Collision because of traveling and then being really sick this weekend. But he doesn't have a belt or anything, right? So what is the challenge for?
Fun.
I think he's like establishing himself. He's like, I'm here to, I know. He said that he wants to fight as many people as possible so he can get back to Christian Cage. So I don't know if it's a rankings thing.
Maybe. You know, wouldn't it be funny if somebody, like, he has built-in clout, right? So that's why he can do an open challenge, because he may benefit in the rankings, but other people presumably will, like, benefit from fighting him at all, or if they win. Wouldn't it be funny if somebody with no clout was just like, it's an open challenge. Anyone is welcome to come at me.
Come fight Matt Sydal, guys. But honestly, now that there are rankings, I feel like a Matt Sydal or a Ryan Nemeth could do great in an open challenge, because everyone wants to boost their rating. So it's like, if you want to go out there and, you know, job.
Well, Matt Sydal's been behaving like he has opened an open challenge, because he's been wrestling everywhere. Left and right when I haven't seen him in a year. I like the man, but it's been confusing.
Yeah.
So Adam Copeland wrestled Dante Martin on Collision and then Suzuki in the main event on Dynamite. So it's young violence, it's old violence, it's all violence. It's good violence. It's
very from ages 9 to 99, you know.
Everybody come get beaten up by me. You guys, how are you feeling about Adam Copeland? You still like this man?
Yeah.
He's bringing a good energy, you know. He's like, he seems happy to be there, which is sometimes all I ask of these people.
To be honest, we can't say it often enough. Having a good attitude is the most important thing in the world. It is the thing most likely to endear you to us specifically. Just have a good attitude, some of you.
Did you guys see Ethan Page's whole thing about, like, I love being on ROH, and why wouldn't I be trying to make it the best place I can, because I'm so happy to be here? I was just Ethan Page, you're great, and I wish you were back on Dynamite.
That made me so happy. I loved that.
Yeah,
what a great attitude. Little sweet baby.
With Adam Copeland, I really, like, something was so endearing about the way he got the mic after the Suzuki match, and was like, that was the hardest I've ever been hit. Like, I believed him.
Yeah, like, welcome to Japan, buddy. Yeah.
Welcome to the murder
that
grandpa.
That was quite sweet. But also, like, slightly, I'm not mad about it, but slightly confusing, where I was like, wow, and you want to talk now? We're 6 minutes over, I think. Like, I think we're supposed to be out of here. But we have infinite overruns now, so everyone can do whatever they want.
Yeah, I know. It's like, it just seems wrong to me. An overrun should be special. You know, you should have to work within the constraints of a time.
It feels like they're stealth adding a third hour. That's where we're getting to with the overruns. I'm not angry about it, because I'm not DVRing it, Brian, but
we've constantly advocated for Tony to gaslight us. And honestly, this would be the best way he's ever added a third hour. As if he just every week, it's an overrun. And we're saying, Tony, it's 45 minutes. And it's an overrun. Don't worry about it. It's an overrun.
It's like when you're teaching a toddler to swim and they're stressed out about getting in the water. He's like, it's only up to your knees. Oh, it's only up to your thighs. Oh, it's only up to your belly button.
Well, and honestly, the overruns used to be like 3 minutes, and now they're like 15. So, I mean, mean, yeah. I think he might be doing this.
Guys, he's working us pretty good, I would say.
The main event doesn't start until 10:15 pretty soon, and then you're just...
Do you guys think that it's literally crazy that someone immediately recognized that the reused Christian backstage footage was from a previous episode of Dynamite?
Yeah.
Can you imagine us recognizing something?
No.
Well, I guess if it were about... If it were about Dustin or the Young Bucks, we'd be like, I know.
If it was Dustin or the Young Bucks, first of all, with Dustin, we'd be like, facial hair is not current. And with the Young Bucks, we're like, those outfits, I know exactly what it was. But Christian, like, I don't think you could see really what he was wearing because the belt was in front of him. But I will give credit that Emmy in our group chat also noticed. Like, Emmy was like,
God bless.
I think that footage of Christian Cage is old, but I don't know who on the internet not only knew it was old, but was able to locate the screenshot from the episode it's from within 3 minutes of the episode ending.
Oh my God,
like,
I know.
Like, it was on Drain Bamager so quickly.
I mean, I do think, though, that the one thing wrestling has taught me that is that every wrestler is somebody's special little baby. Like, they have a so super true. Fan out there, and that super fan was like, oh my God, wow. I cannot believe they did this and, like, had it.
I recognize that Christian, I don't know, hair? Like, what do you think Christian's changing enough that you would notice?
They have been combing through clips, making fan cams. They have been screenshotting it, GIFing it. They know every moment that Christian has ever
been on
the
show. I have to say, you are, I did technically, I knew that, but right now, as you say it, you are expanding my mind. Every wrestler is somebody's son or daughter. But it's a fan, of course, like us, not their parents. That is so true. Yeah, because actually Emmy noticed something about Hangman's match this week that I was like, oh my God, that was such a good catch. But to notice it about Christian as well, Emmy, I know Christian is not your son.
Yeah,
but
that's
yet your attention to detail remains so acute.
Some people have better visual memories than I do, for sure.
Yeah.
So
some people have better memories in general than some of us.
Some of us.
Yeah, well, I think I like Adam Copeland. He can keep doing the Cope Open any time of the show, not just the opening match, because that's not what it refers to. Let's move on to talking about the title scene. So this
Wait
week's
a minute.
Dynamite.
Oh. So sorry. Can I say about the bat? Oh, so I don't know how yes. Adam Copeland would react to a bat in the house. But do you know that video of Barack Obama catching a fly and then just looking into the camera and being like, that's Suzuki catching a bat that flew into his house.
He just smacked the bat down like in one swoop. Yeah, one that's swoop. Absolutely
And
correct,
then he just looks at the camera and goes, did you see that?
Oh my God. That's very right. I'm so sorry. I tried to cruise right past.
No, you were ready. Thank you for letting me interrupt you because I had that image and had to say it.
That was
if
beautiful.
You had not said it, this episode would be worth nothing to me. Okay. This week's Dynamite opened with an in-ring promo from Samoa Joe, who was reiterating his desire to only fight men who've earned the privilege by making their case to a committee. We love it. We've seen no evidence of it thus far, but we love it. He was briefly interrupted by Hook, who came to the ring, embraced him, and then I think was just like, I'll get you next time, or like something a lot, you know, and your little dog too. Was that the vibe that Hook was giving, maybe? And Joe was like, well, maybe so, but right now you're unfortunately going to have to leave the ring. So he hopped out of the ring and then was like, security, come get Hook. So then
guard sees him.
Guard sees him, which I believe we have said we want to see from men before on this program. So good for him. And then Hook beat up the security guards. Can we just have a quick check-in? We've said it before. We'll say it again. It is heel behavior to beat up men who are simply doing their job. They are working men. But I want to raise another point. Who has the ability to call security to escort someone out? You are both employees at this company.
Do you think it's a perk that comes with being the champ?
I'm wondering, I'm trying to think back to like, who have we seen do it? We've certainly seen MJF do it, but I
MJF
think we've seen him do it before he was
champ
the champ.
He wasn't champ. Yeah. So how do you get the power?
Well, usually someone's misbehaving when security comes to pull them off.
But he was just standing there. Like, I feel like Hook should have been able to say, guards sees him.
Yeah.
Well, you know that thing in like when someone tries to like seize like, you know, the throne or whatever, and they like it only works so long as they have the guards behind them. And sometimes they'll put, they'll like seize him. And then the other guy will be like, no, seize him. And the guards will stand between them and be like, I don't know who's in charge right now. I'd love to have that moment where the security guards are like, who are we reporting to?
I believe you're literally describing a scene we recently saw in Battlestar Galactica, a new show that we're all getting into. So we'll be reporting back about that.
I've almost caught up to you guys, so I'm almost ready.
Where are
to
you?
Be there. Middle of season of episode 7.
Oh, so. Yes, shit. Yes. Yeah. We accidentally started without Anne. We didn't know that it was going to be a thing. But so now Anne has to catch up so the whole crew can proceed together.
Get in there. Yeah.
Something else that I thought was very funny about the security guards is by the time Joe got to commentary, because right after this segment, Joe got on commentary for the next match. And as he sat down, he was like talking and he was like, anyways, what the hell was that? Who raised that kid? And Taz just cracked up and was like, who raised him indeed?
Wow.
I love that.
I know that Taz is so proud. Obviously, anytime Hook does anything. But when Hook is doing civil disobedience, I know that Taz is proud of that. But again, don't beat up the security
guards.
Don't
beat up the security guards. Those guys are they are just trying to earn a living.
Yeah.
They should unionize for real.
They get, really like, need to. Extra pay. Remember when we thought that they were going to unionize
behind
Wardlow, but then Wardlow just turned on them? Like, everybody who ascends the social ladder in capitalism, he immediately put his boot on their heads and kicked them back down into the bucket.
That's right.
So true.
Okay, pig.
You're
anyway.
A pipe bong, and then you're a landlord. Yep, exactly.
Oh, okay. So then Joe got on commentary, which I thought was great. He did a really good job.
He was so good. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was doing some great face acting. And then he was on commentary for the opening match, which was Hangman versus Penta. With Hangman debuting his new in-ring style, he's been working it for a while. It's called Big Mad. Really fucking bad.
Really rip shit.
Just in a really fucking horrible mood from the moment he shows up at work to the moment he leaves.
And he's fighting so nasty. Like, he's fighting a lot now. And all of his strikes are so mean.
Fighting is so funny, though, because every time it happens, I just think, oh, little kissy. Oh, little kissy for Penta.
And he spent, like, a lot of time going over to, like, glare at Joe and yell at him and stuff in a way that was very charged, I felt like, and I did not expect from them, but I really loved.
They were doing some good close-ups on Joe's face, and he was, like, doing a good job of, like, kind of being full of himself, but then occasionally having a moment of, like, well, I'm not unmoved by what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So true.
And it's great to, like, beat up on one man while be like, glaring at another man, like, yeah, you'll get it next, buddy.
That's so true. That is a great way to beat up on one man. On a man, on any man. That's a great way for men to beat each other up. That is so true. When the man that they're beating up is nothing to them, but there's a man nearby who's very much something to them, the only thing that would have been better is if it were Swerve. But it was Joe and it still mattered, you know. Do you think that mustache is intensifying week on week?
Yeah, because it's growing and he also trimmed the beard back.
Yeah, but I think it's something like he's shaving his beard closer. And the like the disappearing rest of his hair is making the mustache pop even more. I would not. There's no way that I could describe what's happening that makes it sound attractive, but it could not be more attractive. I'm so into it.
It was so like lush and bushy this week. I mean, it was like forceful. It was coming off his face, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's almost looking like a little. Now, I'm not saying that he's using Just for Men beard and mustache color, but which I believe may have messed up some men's faces. Am I misremembering that we read something about a class action lawsuit?
Yeah, because it was back when there were those commercials for the one day beard and brow where it was like, in what situation do you need beard dye for one day only? Which no one has ever adequately answered.
No one has explained it to us. No.
Yeah, but yeah, that's when we found out that it disintegrated people's faces or whatever.
I don't think he's using beard and brow, but it is darkening a little. Like, I think it is just the way he's trimming it back. It's really present, and that's great. And that is so, so good. Great. So don't so change great. A thing. I mean, continue to experiment, but don't go back. Only go forward, I would say. Okay, so then later in the night, Swerve fought Jeff Hardy. It's a big week for Jeff Hardy, who also fought Darby on Collision this past weekend. I would not have said that Jeff Hardy could do two matches a week, but no. They were He's both been fine.
Whining a they lot, were fine. Though. And this promotion but keeps he is heel proving turning. That whining works.
I think it is kayfabe, like whatever they're doing. Like, yeah. I don't think it's real, but it doesn't mean that I like it. But
no,
I
don't want to see so whining for your heel turn anymore. We've had our fill of it, but I think it is. I think it is a bit. Although, I mean, who fucking knows? Anyway, but so what happened during this match? Oh, whatever. Who cares? Swerve won. The crowd really loved this match. It was fine. We watched it. It was fine. Swerve won, and we cut to a backstage promo with Hangman and Renee. There might have been an ad break. Nobody fact check me about this, okay? We have this backstage promo between Hangman and Renee, which Swerve immediately interrupts, coming off this match, like hot, sweaty, laughing, full of himself, just immediately launching into like, oh, did you see me out there? I was looking good. I was looking so good. It was such fascinating, genuine excitement almost. Like initially of just like, I know I look good. I wish you had seen my glistening body out there. In the-
He's probably like, I'm always staring at you backstage. Were you staring at me? I hope you were. I put on a show.
It honestly was so transparently. Were you watching?
Did you see someone on Twitter saying that Hangman went and put on a necklace after his match for this promo?
I saw that and I love it. I'm
obsessed. Get fancy. When you know that you're about to get interrupted, it's like, I know you knew. I know you're hanging around near Gorilla or whatever, talking to Renee right after. I know you knew.
Swerve and Hangman are both like, they're doing things with their appearance. We've got this mustache like story happening. And then Swerve this week was wearing like a lavender eyeshadow with some glitter. It was very subtle and attractive. And I was like, he's really exploring
the
space.
They're peacocking for each other.
Yeah, exactly.
When I was in college, I had a crush on this guy who later became my boyfriend, and I really was looking for opportunities to get to know him. So I used to go sit on this bench after a lecture that he went to every week, and just nearby in case he showed up, and he would come talk to me. And later we dated. So it's actually quite an effective strategy.
That's a classic little college strategy there. So,
my God, it really worked. Mm. I skipped class a couple times because we were so busy talking.
Wow.
Young love, am I right? Hangman also so fun. So they immediately get into it. Hangman and Swerve are just, it's like they cannot stop themselves. They're immediately yelling at each other. Hangman yelling, new year, new me, dumbass.
It was so funny. Leah, I think you said that his energy was like, yeah, well, the jerk store called. And like, I rewatched it and that was exactly his energy. It's very much like he wants to fuck Swerve so bad it's making him stupid. Because it's just like, that's the worst comeback I've ever heard. Swerve's like, I beat you twice. And Hank was like, new year, new me.
Okay. He stuttered a little bit because he was like, new year, new me, stupid.
Who's doing it like these men? No one.
Nobody.
I want to double back and say, Swerve's eye makeup this week. I know you said it, Anne, and I cruised right by it because I was so excited to talk about waiting on the bench in college. I just wanted to go back in time, but looked so nice. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Every week you try new things and we love to see it. And last week I said maybe a little Bucky Barnes. So this week Swerve said, well, I'll do something a little different. It's not as dark. Mm-hmm. It's bringing a little color, a little shine, a little glimmer at the corner of the eyes. Like it kind of looked like you went in and I don't think you did, but who knows? Kind of looks like you went in and did the inner eye, like right by the nose, the way I see the TikTok girlies do it. You looked beautiful.
If Swerve is on makeup TikTok getting tips, I would love that so much. Swerve should have a tip TikTok where he goes through his process.
Tell us about the look.
Oh my God. Yeah.
We'd like to hear about the look.
You know that TikTok trend of like doing your makeup while reciting like a comedy monologue or something? Yeah. I would fucking love it if Swerve picked some kind of like monologue or like something to recite at, or like to lip sync to as he's doing his makeup.
Oh my God. Wow. You guys have to remind me later to send you a TikTok trend that I think that Danny Garcia should do. Great. So then, okay, so this segment ends with Renee breaking the men up and saying, next week you will both have matches, dealer's choice matches, which means that you will choose each other's opponents. The way I popped for this, I was like, finally, someone is giving these men the kind of little mind challenge that they need. You pick each other's opponents. You have to strategize. Yeah. You have to decide, like, what kind of man do I want my nemesis to fight? Not someone that they're going to hate more than me. Right. Not someone they're going to hate, love more than me. Someone who will kill them, but not the way I would kill them. Someone who will present a challenge, but not the challenge I present.
Right. Right. But you want them to injure them. You want them off balance in some way. You want them to know that this pain they're having came from you at the same time. This proxy pain.
Proxy pain, exactly, proxy Anne.
Yeah, why are they doing these kind of...
You never want them to forget for a second in that match that you are the one who engineered this situation.
Exactly, exactly. Like, I feel like Swerve is being so, you know, like, confident and cool all the time. If I were Hangman, I would want him, like, something that would throw him off and really annoy him. Like, I could see a Max Caster really driving him crazy if he got some burns in. Or he could go with, like, Keith Lee if Keith Lee would wrestle, but, you know.
Well, it's kind of- Max... beat him for the tag titles, right?
So Oh yeah. That's right. I almost forgot
and
that.
He's the one who called Swerve Randall from Monsters Inc.
That's unfortunately
oh my God, right. is in my that mind at all times.
Yes. Yeah, get that going at Swerve. That would really I would love for Max Caster to do the rap while Hangman's like standing right next to him looking at Swerve like, yeah, listen to this.
Now, do you think that Max Caster would meet this? I'm like, there's another thing you could do that this is psychological warfare. You could choose someone who will put up enough of a fight to be like a challenge, but not a good enough fighter to feel like someone would still feel like that's who you think I should be fighting. That's who you think I can handle.
That's true too. Send them a Matt Sydal or Ryan Nemeth, and it's like okay,
might be in that zone where
he
like
is
you
a
know,
little bit, yeah, for singles,
it would just be kind of like, oh, here, I'll give you a little easy win. Like he's not gonna, you know, get on his back immediately, but.
So true. He'd make him work for it.
Make him work for it, but not as much as he could work for it.
Right. Yeah, you're not throwing a Danielson at him. You're not throwing a
no,
Moxley.
Exactly. Oh my God, yeah.
Well, so when you put this on the schedule, I picked who I thought
if I was one of them. Oh my God,
and,
amazing.
And honestly, if I was Swerve, I would give Danielson. I would pick Danielson for Hangman. Hangman is insecure about people with big reputations, so he's gonna psych himself out. He's gonna self sabotage. Be miserable, and he's going to need Swerve to build him back up at his lowest.
Oh, okay.
And if I was Hangman, I would be like, hey, I heard you were really close with someone in WWE. Was Copeland a father figure to you? Was he so important to you? You think you can beat him?
Ooh. My God. Leah?
That's a good
diabolical.
One.
Diabolical.
So that's who I would choose, Danielson and Copeland.
That's so powerful. Pit father against son. That's so powerful. Wow. Well, I can't wait to see what they do. Just to cap it off, how do you think these men would handle bats in their homes?
Bats in their homes?
Capably, I think.
Interesting.
Frankly, I think,
yeah, capably.
I think Hangman literally would be able to catch a bat, cup it in his hands, release it out, and I'm a little up in the air. I think he would say, the bat didn't bite me. I don't need rabies. I think rabies vaccine.
He might responsibly get work gloves.
He might wear work gloves. Yeah.
It definitely would be a BTE bit later where like Hangman would be telling people what happened and like Alex Reynolds would be like, did you get tested for rabies? And Hangman's like, No. I mean, it didn't bite me.
It would be. And it would have to be someone other than Alex. I refuse to believe that Alex Reynolds would responsibly ask, did you get tested for rabies?
He's the one in the Dark Order with a brain cell.
No, I'm like, Alex Reynolds has rabies. Everyone in the Dark Order has rabies already. They would be like, did you get more rabies for us? We want double rabies.
Well, I agree with you about Hangman. I think Swerve would burn down the house. I think Swerve would be like, okay, see you guys later. Toss a match behind him.
He goes, like, he disappears, he gets in the car, he drives away, he builds a whole new life somewhere else.
Yeah, he's like, I don't live there anymore.
Once the bat's in the toilet, yeah, it's like, we gotta get rid of this place. House is for sale.
If the bat's in the toilet, I think, but do you think that Swerve might impulsively just flush? Without even thinking any further. Yeah. It might just be like, oh, no, absolutely no, flush. No, done.
Yeah.
Whatever happens to the pipes.
I never really considered flushing it, but to flush it, you have to get pretty close to the bat situation. I was not feeling cozy with
those wrestlers are fast though. They slide in, they slide out.
They are.
Yeah.
They're quick.
And Swerve has those long arms too.
Yeah. That's so true. Okay, so let's head over to tag team land. We're going to talk about Sting and Darby, who got an in-ring promo this week, in which Darby gave us a little of his and Sting's backstory at AEW. He extolled Sting's virtues. He led the crowd in a rousing "You've Still Got It" chant. And then, as I've said here, he promposed that he and Sting should win the tag team belts before Sting retires. Sting, do you agree? He said, Sting, what do you say? And he kind of, it was so cute. Like, he went to give Sting the mic, and then it felt like he couldn't deal with the silence, and he said, it's all you, man, and then gave him the mic again. It's like, yeah, he had the mic. We were in the moment. It's okay. And Sting said, yes to life, yes to love, yes to fighting Ricky and Big Bill. Later, we got a backstage promo with Ricky and Big Bill, who said, sure, they are willing to fight. I would consider this one of their lower energy promos. Kind of the promo, I would say, of men who are not going to be holding those titles for much longer. The match will take place on February 7th. What'd you guys think?
This was so sweet. Like, this is really nice for Sting's retirement, because it really is like, he and Darby have been like the thing for the whole time in AEW. Yeah. And it's like, since we don't have history with him before that, it's like, not to be selfish, but it's like, I don't really care about the rest of his career
I wanted. Like, I mean, I get that, like, he had a whole life and that people know him for things, and Ric Flair's part of it. I mean, not that I'm defending Ric Flair being there, but you know what I mean? But, like, this is what I wanted. I wanted, like, Darby to talk about, like, what Sting has done for him. And I really, I want them to make a little retrospective vid. I want make me cry my face out.
I didn't tell you guys this, but when I went looking for, so Leah said this, she was like, can I say this? Leah said, I wish we could watch the first time Sting and Darby met at AEW. And I said, we can, it is possible. But then, because I was like, we can find the episode. But then I was like, well, maybe it's on YouTube. So I started Googling, I'm just, you know, Sting Darby first time AEW. And I found an hour and a half long video that started, it was like, the history of Sting and Darby ... And I was like, oh my God, that's perfect, from AEW. Thank you so much. I didn't know you made this. I click on it, and it was like the history of Sting and Darby and Christian and whoever they were fighting. And I was like, guys, I'm looking for just a romantic, platonic retrospective of what these men have meant to each other. I don't care about it's not about who they've been fighting. It's about what they found in each other. Okay. Yeah. So
you need a classic, a classic father-lover retrospective, like we've all seen so many times. Like, come on.
It feels like it's somehow related to the mother-boy pageant is the area that we're in.
Can we talk about also how Darby said that he, before Sting started, flew to Sting's house and they went to Sting's backyard wrestling ring and rolled around together?
Started rolling around the ring. I said, why did that happen? Can someone explain to me? Maybe if we knew more about wrestling when we started watching. We don't remember that much. It's really like a hazy dream when we started watching. Maybe we were told this. But now, in the year 2024, I need to hear again, like, what was up? Like, Tony was arranged marrying it. He's just like, I've hired a new man. Darby, I'd like you to fly to his home.
I think you two might have a lot in common.
I have big dreams for the two of you. Can we do our special activity? And so I did find a clip that purports to be, it says, you won't believe what happens when Sting and Darby interact for the first time at AEW. I was like, I think I might believe it, but shall we watch it together? And we'll air this for you, our listeners.
Yeah, we will. And if it doesn't work, we'll just cut it. But also, I just want to say, if any listener out there is willing, I would like a vid for Darby and Sting sent to Sawyer Brown's The Walk.
That's napalm, bitch. That's not safe. That's not safe to feed girls. That isn't safe.
I think I would need to be hospitalized.
I'm putting that in my back pocket.
Wow.
In case I want to incapacitate you. But yeah, if any of our listeners are willing to do it, please step up.
I love the idea of you following up your Young Bucks bid with an emotional devastation.
Okay. Oh my God. Ready? Take us back. Yeah, take us back. This is from must be early, late 2020 or early 2021. Take us back.
Yeah.
This is Sting!
Wow.
Look at Shivani's little puffer jack vest.
Honestly, I miss that look. He's doing something with his hair now that, I mean, I'm sure it's just so to bad. Hide balding, but I'm like, don't hide it. It's fine. It's fine to bald. Balding is fine.
They don't really do the snow anymore, do they?
The overhead shot.
They still do.
The overhead shot.
Yeah.
Well, the snow is kind of only in Florida, isn't it?
To be honest, when they were only at Daly's place, they got comfortable enough to do some great cinematography.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was
they
it?
Really did. I missed Daly's place. Look at those tunnels. Look at those beautiful tunnels.
Do you know how many people are like? So why is your podcast named that?
I know.
Like, oh my God.
Why do you record on Thursdays and release on Sundays?
Yes. It's like, because of history.
Well,
wow, you Sting really toned down this look a lot over time.
TNT champion.
Oh my God, I love Tony Schiavone. He looks so sweet.
He looks so sweet.
Now,
was it Dustin who told us that the snow is actually just like flakes of soap? And then if it gets in your mouth, it's fucked up.
I didn't remember that.
Justin would be out there sticking his tongue out for Sting snow. I think the week before this, we might have seen Darby up in the rafters like Sting used to lurk.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Just watching Sting.
Oh, this is when he had TNT belt for the first time.
And uncanny. Well, that was
a good time.
Of TNT belt. Yeah.
Wow. This is. It's funny because it's like in some ways his look hasn't changed that much, but a little bit it has.
But I wish everybody.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Better. That is why we called them the original father lovers, because the way Sting is looking at him is wild.
Guys, we didn't know what to think. We didn't know what to think.
We did not understand. Darby. This settled into just a father-son relationship, Sting, but now Sting's face is uncertain.
Yeah. This was before Darby really moved into the territory of the way that he interacts with Sting is full teen.
Just reminds me about me.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
and I kind of like it. You know,
I think see myself wrestler. In you.
I want to be the first to, in public, congratulate you for being our TNT champ.
Wow. Ooh, that's nice.
And second, what I want to do is just make sure that everybody understands I wasn't here to interrupt in the match.
Wait, Darby's looking at him, too.
He had a straight-up chance to win. Didn't hold on to his title. Shut up.
Did he prevent someone from cheating, maybe?
Sting,
Oh, and this is what I saw a little hint of. RIP Taz. Look at baby Hook.
Oh, my God. Look at Hook. His hair's so short.
Even, honestly, Brian Cage even looks younger there. Well, and worse. And the same. Actually, just the complete same.
Ricky's got his little glasses on.
I love those glasses, to be honest. Ricky, I miss you on Team Taz. You were such a little bitch. Complimentary.
Mm-hmm. All right. Wow. I think that was right. Yeah. That was
saw what we needed to see. Wow.
Yeah.
It is just so great that they brought Sting in, and it's like, there is a young man here who is just your soulmate, and you guys will have a great time. And they did.
They did it. They did it so perfectly where, like, in that clip, you just see Sting be like, I know you. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. it's like the part of Hook where, like, except reversed, I guess, where, like, the little kids are touching Hook's face and being like, there you are, Peter. Except, like, oh, Sting's going, oh my God, looking at you. Oh, yeah, yeah, sorry.
I was like, the part of Hook, I don't know who Hook's soulmate is, but I'm interested to learn. No,
more
Hook
and more. Danhausen?
Steven Spielberg's Hook.
Yeah, Steven Spielberg's Hook. Nice, we did nice. Rewatch that recently. Yes, no, now I know what you mean, where they say, yeah. I don't yeah, see, no, but then, totally. Wait a second, that's you.
And that was Sting's face where he's looking at Darby going, I know you.
I know
you're
you.
Me.
Oh, my God. Wow. It's
yeah. I love that.
It's romance. It's family. It's friendship. It's everything. Thank you, Sting and yeah. Darby, and, for our lives.
And Sting really, too. Like, he just, for an old legend wrestling guy, like, just doesn't have the kind of ego where he, like, gets in the way of other people. Like, he's just been so good, like, supportive of Darby. And, yeah. you know, like, even there just being like, I wanted to congratulate yeah. you or whatever.
I know.
Just,
it is. It's funny because now with years of wrestling behind me, I had a moment of being like, oh my God. It feels like usually he would, like, then beat him up or something. But actually, it was just yeah. a healthy relationship for years and years where I think Darby learned a lot and grew emotionally and had the space to act out a lot of his big feelings and know there was somewhere safe to go at the end of the day and someone who would still be there for him. I think that's really beautiful, actually. Thank you for being some of the emotionally healthiest wrestlers in the ring.
Do you remember yeah. when Darby said, Sting, I don't even remember who he was facing, where he was like, I have to do this alone. You yeah, have to yeah. you have to stay home and let me face them. And Sting was like, no, don't.
No, well, don't.
I guess.
I can't follow.
But he let him do it.
Mr. Frodo. Do you remember when Darby defensively said, Sting isn't my dad. He's my best friend.
He's my best friend. It was so funny. It was just like he could not have sounded more like a little kid in that moment. Like,
do you think that if yeah. a bat got into Darby's house, he yeah. would welcome it and in fact
yeah.
be like,
you get rabies. Yeah.
Yeah. He would be like, this bat yeah. is, it came for me. It is my bat. I love bat.
Yeah.
I think he'd be like, my it seemed bat. Like, it felt like a sign.
It would live in his it bedroom. Felt like a sign.
And yeah. potentially Sting might too. I mean, to be honest, yeah. Sting might also be like, yes, this bat. Oh my God.
With
Darby
this bat.
Is Sting's bat.
Wow. It's flapping around his bedroom.
My third
Sting
eye?
Is like, yes, I welcome
wide
you.
Wide open. I think that Sting would really placidly open a window. You know what I mean? Like, I think he'd be like, you do you, little friend. And he'd open a window. Mm-hmm. And I think if the bat wanted to come in and out, Sting would let it. You know?
Probably.
All right. So Sting and Darby's in-ring promo was at one point intercut with footage of the Bucks backstage watching on monitor with these little earpieces in because, you know, they're running the show.
If it clearly ran long because they had to do the overrun. Do you think if something hadn't happened, then they ran long, the Bucks were supposed to interrupt that or no?
Did what part? What? Mm. Oh, it ran long?
Well, because they had to do a couple minutes overrun, right? So the show ran long. So I'm wondering whether they cut the Bucks actually.
I don't think so. I think they weren't supposed to. I think they're going to do some kind of promo thing next week. I don't know. But who knows? Maybe.
Who knows?
That was not the first appearance we got from the Bucks in the night. They also got a backstage promo segment in which they were wearing some new mall store prom suits. Ill-fitting. And they were kind of wandering around backstage, condescending to various people that they passed on the way, talking about how they, what did they say? They fixed catering.
They said to Alex, Matt said to Alex Marvez, have you been to catering today? We fixed it. You're welcome.
Like, to be honest,
delicious. Wasn't
that
it?
Really felt like that's kind of how I think about the backstage. That's the level of understanding I have of the backstage. I'm just like, well, someone's probably got to, sometimes what do you got to do? Fix catering. That felt right.
You know how like in an office, like people will get really mad if like the wrong pens get ordered and stuff. Do you think like wrestlers backstage, it's like if they get the wrong snacks at catering, like people
really throw off the whole show.
Yeah.
If certain people don't have what they need.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't there a BT bit about like them getting real excited, or no, that Kenny got mad at the Bucks for not telling him that the peanut butter cheesecake was back? Like, oh, honest to God, think that is a huge part of the backstage.
I am having a moment where I'm suddenly like envisioning like the backstage of AEW as like its community, the sitcom. And that's what's happening back there every week.
Yeah.
That's,
they're like, I did eat all the macaroni. It's messed up that he knows.
Someone's running a little chicken tender racket back there. That feels right. And then the Bucks gave each other a little fist bump because they were so proud of how good a job they're doing as EVPs. I have to say, this was a slightly different version of asshole than I thought they were going to be doing based on the sit down promo, because of this thing that they did where it's like they encountered Top Flight and they were like, you got to get here on time, you have to be in your gear, and then they said, but let's have a great show guys, and they gave them the little fist bump. Immediately I was just like, fuck, the Bucks are so good. They did this little riff on it that's just like, that's so shitty and condescending, and like your boss that you hate. It's so much better than just like the kind of blank, like baseline like EVP asshole boss that I feel like people, you know, have been putting onto that. They're taking these characters further than I thought they would, and I love it.
One Nation Radio, I think Rich was saying, he was like, the Bucks have this ability to make people forget that wrestling is fake, because so many people true. In the comments were like, finally, people are finally seeing what the Bucks are like. Buddy.
Imagine having like the level of brain disease where you're like, they've been acting this whole time, but this is their real self.
Yeah. When they're doing like the hammiest. Wake up. It's so funny. I know. The like self-congratulation part of it really did add just like such a chair, because it is every terrible boss who's like, I'm doing it.
Right. Yeah.
Like, and the people love me. We have great relationships. Right. Like,
and the fact that like obviously the thing they get accused of a lot, like that, you know, they're riffing on a little bit with this character is like they book themselves into great spots, like it's self-interest, that's what's going on with them. I love that they've built in this element where it's like, no, we want to get a good job on our wrestling report card as EVPs. So we do care about the show being good because it looks good for us. Like it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's corporate America, baby.
Trish and Sarah said that they need to get back on Twitter and take credit for every single thing that happens in AEW. If it's bad, they spin it for themselves. If it's good, they take complete credit for it.
Oh, that's like, amazing. Oh, we did this. That's exactly right.
That'd
be
so funny. Yeah. Pull a little Tony Khan where it's like, if people don't like it, well, it was, you know, Brian Danielson's really in charge of booking collisions, so, you know.
The ultimate power move would be for Brian Danielson to tweet something and the Bucks to tweet, come see me about this. We need to have a talk about this. Brian, we need to have a talk about this.
Who finds so Brian? Oh, it's the Bucks.
Who finds the finder? Who watches the watchman? It's the EVPs, baby. Now, also, really notable, we got the return of Alex Marvez doing investigative journalism. Thank you so much. Thank you. He was back in his element. They were pushing him aside like, we have no scoops for you, Alex. He said, my children are starving. They said, nobody cares. We got to have a good show. Good show, Alex. Great.
That was the moment that I was like, oh my God, we are having an impact on the culture.
We know. Should we take a little victory lap? Just, yeah.
We got Alex Marvez's job back single-handedly.
I have to say, there was a run of Dynamite this week where I thought, what do you do with the man who got everything? You know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
we got it all,
Charlie.
Top to bottom. Just lavender eyeshadow to picking each other's opponents to
little necklace,
these Miami Vice suits.
New year, new me, dumbass. I think we're doing amazing.
Samoa Joe wearing the only well-fitting suit that's ever been on Dynamite.
Where are they getting these suits?
Do you guys agree with me? They have to be renting them. They have to be doing a rent.
I don't know.
I don't think that these suits cost any more than a pair of you know what? Just to be honest with you.
And that is so true. And I have to say, if Rent the Runway is stocking suits like this, they honestly do. They look like they're dressing for prom in a bad way. but in a perfect way for the characters. I think that Samoa Joe has been wearing the only nice suit I've ever seen in wrestling.
Yeah.
And immediately, of course, Ann and I have both made this clear that we follow the Twitter menswear guy. We love to talk about the Twitter menswear guy. I think about him near constantly now and the things that I've learned from him.
Every time I see
him. So I was watching Samoa Joe in the ring. I'm like, I need him to do a little soft shoe, a little tap shoe, so I can see how it moves when he's dancing. Because the collar should stay right where it sits. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't move at all. And his looked like it might not.
It looked great. And honestly, like looking at Samoa Joe's suit compared to every other suit I've ever seen on Dynamite, it reminded me of like America's Next Top Model when they'd like make them pick outfits and stuff. And usually the like model girls, they did not know how to dress at all. And the like quote unquote plus size models who were, you know, like size 12
That's
or whatever.
So true.
Like they were the only ones who knew how to dress. And I was like, oh yeah, because really skinny people, like all clothes just fit them. They just so they're like, I don't know, whatever. I'm hot. So like, yeah, Samoa Joe, I think, is possibly the only one who knows how to dress.
That is a really good point, Anne. That feels really right and real to me. Everybody else is like the suits that we're seeing. It's like when you buy a tablecloth, like a disposable tablecloth for an event. Like that's what these suits look like.
Yeah.
They look like they're meant to be worn for a night and thrown out.
The fit, these skinny cuts, they're not working for them.
But again, for
they're working for the characters.
I was talking more general. The Young Bucks.
Yeah, they're hideous. Perfect. They're absolutely hideous.
Yeah, every
they're
time.
They're hideous. Yeah, absolutely. But they sort of have both of them this week. The last week, they did not seem like they were both dressed for the same event. This week, they were. But the event was that it was a 90s prom and they were background like friends. You know, like they're not the main couple. They're the
That's
the couple's friends who are like dancing
like real
in the background.
Side characters.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. No, that's right.
They're going to be over by the punch bowl for a while in the just like
they make like
talking.
One catty comment to each other about like the main couple or something. Yeah.
Oh my god. Well, great work. Great work from everybody involved, and I can't wait to see where it goes. Okay, let's kick it over to the women's division. So this week on Dynamite, we got a live promo from Deonna and Tony. So they came out, it was kind of a Sundance Film Festival style sit down in their like camp director chairs with Renee Paquette. They delved deeper into some of their shared history, revealing that not only have they been roommates, although I liked specifically that Deonna said, you came and lived in my house.
Yes.
A little lodger situation.
Little details, yeah.
Love it. So not only have they been roommates, but they actually have matching ankle tattoos.
That was incredible.
That was incredible. And it's so important to me that the tattoos are bad. Yeah. It is like, it is essential.
You can tell they were 22 when
they
that
are
happened.
Fuzzy. Yes. They are fuzzy.
They're nonsensical. I think it's a duck. It's a badly drawn duck. And it's so important to me that these girls have carried this ugly tattoo for years.
The fact is, that says it's real history.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. This is the real, you are going back to their, back to the root of your whole deal.
This isn't a friendship of 2 years. You didn't get this tattoo when you were in your 30s. For sure.
No. This was a dumb decision you made together.
I hope it was on a New Jersey boardwalk.
Oh my God.
Deonna,
sing it,
sister. Deonna said, Tony, let me show you my turf.
I can show you the world. Shining, shimmering splendor. Tell me, princess, when did you last let your heart decide?
They went, they looked at like the book in the tattoo place and they picked that duck out together.
Oh,
giggling,
that's so
clutching each other, being like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
We'll
are we going to
do this forever?
Are we really doing this?
No, we're not. Maybe we are.
I fucking love them. So then this promo eventually gave way to some violence. Thank you. I think Leah corrected me. Deonna high kicked Luther. She kicked Luther and little Malay, and then everybody skedaddled. What'd you guys think of the promo?
Oh my God.
I loved it, particularly because Tony did such a good job of telling people off for body shaming.
Oh my God.
While also like still staying in character.
Absolutely. I want to be clear, like we popped for this so hard.
The line, you were recently body shamed, which is ridiculous because there's so much more to shame about you. It's so funny. Yeah.
And the way she delivered it when it was like, I believe you were recently body shamed, which had kind of like the tenure of like, so you've just like bought a house. Like it's like an instructional book. Like, so you've recently been body shamed.
It was so great. It made me feel so like I felt like a warrior for Deanna. I felt like a fucking like, yes, Toni Storm, you're my daughter too. Not that she's never been my daughter, but this really like, I just felt so happy about both of them.
I felt so happy. And also Toni needs to keep saying things that confuse men. I will twist your lips so hard. Oh my God. You need an epidural.
Like that was for messed girls. Up. That was so that's funny.
Girls. That's for girls.
That's for girls. I could not believe it when I heard that. I
was just like, get along, away with that.
She's getting away with everything because I think that honestly, there are some of these lines that it's like, either she's not running them by anyone, and if men heard them, they'd be like, is it offensive to tell her not to say that? Do I have to let her say that? Is it her right as a woman in the workplace to say that? I guess I'll say nothing. I guess I'll let her do it. Thank you, Toni, for pushing the limits.
Yeah, I hope she absolutely is playing it backstage and be like, oh, so what is the limits around, like, female stuff?
Oh, so I'm not allowed to talk about women's health? I'm not allowed to talk about women's health
now? I hope she is. God. I can't believe
how much. I support you in everything you do. I support women's rights and women's wrongs.
I would do any. Right now, I'm like so high on Toni where I'm like, she can do anything. And it's honestly just because they're keeping these segments so short and doing something different in every single one. It's just, so good. And
like they did a split screen in this one, black and white on Toni's half and color on the other. And it was like, it's so dumb, but it was so funny.
But it's so great because Toni is so uninterested in like how she looks. You can tell like her entire body is like for the joke. She's not holding herself in a way where she thinks she's hot. And one of the people in our group chat today was like, I just think she's really, I forget what the exact words are. I'm going to murder it. But like she's reinvigorating what stories women are allowed to tell. And it's like, Yes, because AEW, every single time they've ever gotten close to having a woman tell a story that's not, I'm hot and mad, they've backed away from it. And so, like, for this, like, it's so good for me to be like, neither of those women on this, and to be clear, they are both beautiful.
They're
but like,
absolutely beside the point. Hunk city, okay?
Hunk city. But you could tell wasn't important to either of them on the stage. Yeah. Like, Deanna gives this vibe where she's like, I absolutely will throw hands in a second. Like, and I won't look pretty while I'm doing it.
It's amazing.
It feels so good to watch. And I think a couple of weeks ago, maybe, Allie, you said something about, I forget who, it was like maybe Mariah May or somebody, but it was like a person who's like very, like their presentation is very like, I'm being hot for men. Kind of, it's like just a bummer. And it's like, cause it's like, I'm not mad at the woman. It's like, she's just existed under the patriarchy. Like all this, but like looking at her makes me remember that like, I too am existing under the patriarchy and it like sucks. So watching women actually just be like really funny and like mean and interacting with each other in a way that like, isn't about what men think about it at all. Just feels like so good.
Yeah. And I will say that since then, like, Mariah May has been doing actually a lot of stuff that I'm like, I think that's so funny and fun and makes me like you way more than I thought I did. Mm-hmm. Then like, because the initial presentation like just felt like, oh yeah, and women have to be hot in a certain way. But I'm so happy. I feel so high on like a lot of what's going on in the women's division right now, where it just feels like across the board, like just people are just being like weirder and more present and like having more fun. Like it feels really, really, really good. And I know that
they got so much more time this week. It's like we had multiple women's promos and we hadn't even gotten to the women's match yet. And then like the women's match was like not very like storyline-y or whatever, but it's like, I don't care. Like it's,
because
like if we've got storylines, like we can have some random matches like the men have, you know?
Right. I will absolutely be way more forgiving of random matchups when it doesn't feel like that's the only chance they have to get on the show.
Yeah.
Because there were so many promos. It ruled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we can talk about, well, actually, let's quickly look at, so, like, the other stuff that we saw in the night. So we had the Deonna Tony promo. We had a Taya Valkyrie promo where she was challenging Deonna because she was being like, don't, you can't cut the line. As I said here, see how the rankings create coherence already? So she's like, you can't cut the line for a shot at Tony. And she, I guess she's doing a gimmick with Johnny TV, a man I honestly really don't believe exists. Like, I'm just like, that doesn't seem right.
I hear from our sisters at Waffly Bollocks that he is in a very funny feud with Dalton Castle right now. And it's unfortunate.
On ROH.
On ROH.
Yeah.
And it is unfortunate that we cannot visit that place because everything I have heard is that it is a very good feud.
It's too bad we are banned from there.
They won't let us in. They don't want to hear what we have to say about it.
Our computers don't get that channel.
We don't get that channel.
Oh, my God. So that was great. And then we had Thunder Rosa and Red Velvet had a match. We hadn't seen much of them or anything of them in 2023 in Rosa's case. It was Rosa's second singles match since coming back. She fought Queen Amanada on the weekend. Queen Amanada's been getting a push. She fought Chris Statlander on Rampage, and they're doing a storyline because Stokely wants to become her manager, and she's been holding out against it. But this week she did let him manage her. I think that's right. And Willow was supposed to be in her corner, but Stokely canceled Willow's flight. So then they got backstage and Willow was like being like, he canceled my flight. And he was being like, so what if I did? And then Chris was like, okay, I'll deal with this later. Like, it's fine. And left with both of them, like with Willow being like, what the fuck do you mean you'll deal with this later when this is clearly this man's fault? Everybody's been doing great. It's storylines. Yeah. It's things that are going on. Like, obviously not all of it. Like, I'm not really sure what's going on with Thunder Rosa psychologically since coming back, but it's just been great. It's been really, really, I mean, the bar's on the floor. The bar's in hell,
I was like, there's so much Windows content. And then you count it up and it's like, well, like 3-4 things, but like, that's so much more than we usually get. And like, and then there's like the Ruby Soho stuff going on with the Jeff Parker storyline. Like, there's just like several storylines, which is nice. And none of them are taking up that much time, but like, it's enough that it's got some continuity to it. And I'm interested.
And I really, really, really like, I don't want to sound lectury, but it's like, I just want everyone to internalize, like, like, these segments are not that long. A lot of them are so, so, so short. Like, even, like, Deonna and Tony didn't get so much time. Like, it was pretty brief. Like, I know that some people don't like it, but I feel so defensive about it because of what you said earlier, Leah, which we've been saying, which is, like, they're very short segments, and she does something new every week. She doesn't give you the same speech every week. She adds a new, like, dimension to the joke every week. Like, I understand that everybody doesn't like it, but, like, I feel, like, actually kind of aggro where I'm like, I don't want to hear you complain about it. It's not that much time.
No, and I mean, I think that has also been true of this Stokely Chris thing. Like,
yes.
So Chris is not, God love her, you know, I would die for Chris Statlander. She's a terrible promo giver. And they
I love you, Chris. I love you forever.
I would die for you. You're beautiful and you're amazing and you're hunk. But she gets nervous. And so what they've been doing is having Stokely doing things that she can react to.
Yes.
He does a new thing every single time.
Yes.
And the key, it lasts at most 45 seconds. If you give me 45 seconds every episode where somebody is doing something that bounces off the last time, that makes me very happy. And you know, you keep doing that,
how quickly you can have my sword. You know how quickly you get my sword under those conditions?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. With the Tony Storm's thing too, do you know that story from, like, I think it's from Tina Fey's book where she, like, Amy Poehler was doing a bit, like, back at the table read or something at Saturday Night Live, and it was like kind of stupid or whatever, and Jimmy Fallon turned to her and said, stop doing that, like, it's not cute, I don't like it. And Amy Poehler's eyes, like, went black, and she turned to him and said, I don't care if you like it. And, like, that feels like the energy I have for, like, men getting worked up about Tony Storm's, like, maybe it's not for you,
maybe it's not for you.
Maybe it doesn't need to be cute, okay?
That is my all-time favorite Amy Poehler story. Like,
it's so good.
I love thinking about her head turning around backwards and just yelling at him.
Right. And it's like, Jimmy Fallon is a man who maybe should have been yelled at a time or two more than he was. I'll say that.
Yeah, I think that's become clear over time. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not saying it. I'm not putting him down completely. I'm not throwing him out with the trash, but...
He's not canceled, but, you know.
I don't know.
He could think about some of his behaviors.
I'm not canceling him, but I might put him in the trash.
Sure.
Anything's possible. We like to see more stuff going on in the women's division. We're happy. We feel happy. Okay? Yeah. So let's move on to talking about the BCC. So this week we had Mox fighting Shane Taylor on Collision. And then Shane Taylor cut a promo. I did not see it. Did you guys see it?
No.
No.
Oh, fuck it. We ball. then Mox also got a promo on Dynamite. This was one of the most coherent Mox promos I've seen in about a million years. And I love Mox promos. Like, I'm not dissing him. But this one, it was just so clear what was going on the whole way through.
He went to Japan, got his head straight.
This man is giving healthy, wealthy, and wise. He is mentally well, unlike his friend Brian Danielson, who is having a full menti bee over the fact that Eddie Kingston beat him at wrestling one time, okay?
One time in his whole career, yeah.
One single time. He has not stopped thinking about it for a second since. He has not stopped talking about it for a second since. He and Claudio cut a promo on Collision because they were going to fight Eddie and Ortiz, and it was just Brian Danielson raging, being like, Eddie Kingston is worth nothing. He should never have beaten me. It was a fluke. He didn't beat us for real. Like, it's just a fucking fluke.
You were just good on one day. You've got to be good for your whole career, like I have. Like,
it's so funny. It's just like, girl, aren't you a billionaire living in a mansion in wrestling terms? Don't you think that maybe it's okay to let somebody else have one win? And he's like Jeff Bezos being like, no, bankrupt him. Bankrupt him.
And Claudio's energy and response was so funny, because Claudio was like, why are we always talking about Eddie? Why does Eddie follow me everywhere I go? I don't want to talk about Eddie anymore.
Oh, 20 years talking about Eddie. I'm sick of it. Yeah.
Do you think that's a little to be super topical? Don't you think that's a little bit like in it's the Mean Girls moment where Janice Ian is like, stop talking about Regina George.
Yeah.
That's where Claudio's at.
Yes.
He's like, I want to move on with my life. It's been 20 years. I hear nothing about Eddie. I want to move on. So anyway, then he and Danielson did fight Eddie and Ortiz. They won by pinning Ortiz. Danielson made the crowd call Eddie a bum. He was so mean. He is so mean. Cruel, vindictive freak. Okay.
These are the moments that I actually do believe he's a heel, because sometimes I don't, but like these are the moments where I'm like, you're a bad person.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing that's so funny about the BCC is that I'm like, fundamentally to me, Mox is a good person. Like, sometimes he is heel aligned because he's having a violent surge, you know, but I'm like, he's not.
But it's not malicious. His violence is just.
It's not malicious.
It's just, it's like a bat in your room, you know, it's like they got to fly. They're not coming at you on purpose.
He didn't mean to go in the toilet. Okay, the image of Mox as a bat in the toilet, looking, but he'd be thrashing the whole time.
He'd be thrashing. This bat was much more docile than Mox would have been in my toilet.
Do you think that Mox would try to keep a bat as a pet? Like, maybe.
Yeah, possibly.
Do you think Brian Danielson definitely would?
Oh, Brian, he wouldn't keep it as a pet, though, because it needs to be outside.
He'd want to return it to its environment. You're so right. He'd want to return it. But
he'd return
Mox
it while
like,
giving you a lecture on live here. How important they are to the ecosystem.
Do you think that Mox would open the bathroom door, see that there was a bat in the toilet, immediately go, hey, Renee, come here, you want to see something? And then when Renee came and like screamed, he'd be like, it's just a bat. And then like for the rest of the night, he'd follow around and touch her and be like, oh my God, Renee, it's a bat.
Don't you think, though? I think that Renee is like so like hearty in her mind that she would see it. She'd maybe yelp, and then she'd be like, "Oh my God, what is wrong with you? Get out of the toilet!" 100%. Like, she would just be like, "Get your life together." She's a little bat. She's a Canadian girl. I think they deal with bats up there. I think they know what they're doing with bats up there.
Yeah, they're at the cottage. There are some bats. Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. So, and then Eddie is in the early stages. It seems like he's going. He's going to be driven a little crazy by some of the stuff that is happening to him, namely Brian Danielson. It's pretty much Brian Danielson is like, I'm going to make your life a living hell. And Eddie said, that's great. I'll never sleep again.
Eddie's
and
such
I don't
a,
care what happens to me.
Eddie's such a good babyface for making someone a heel, because it is like you really believe, because like trying to humiliate Eddie is like the worst thing anything
What's wrong
anyone
with
can
you?
Do, you know?
Sicko? Like,
yeah.
Derogatory? do you guys think that this is going to impact the relationships in the BCC? Do you think we're going to get a BCC breakup in 2024? We are, of course, supposed to get Danielson's retirement from full-time wrestling in 2024, I think.
I think it's time for a BCC breakup. I would like it, especially with Danielson going to part-time or whatever. It seems like a good time to have some high drama.
I think the simple fact is that all of you loving doing violence and loving hanging out in a basement can only connect a group of people for so long. Mm. Like at a certain point, the ideological differences are going to become apparent. And Danielson's ideological difference of being a full-time mean freak right now should have an impact on his relationships, I think. Because Mox was so happy for Eddie when he won.
I know. And Mox has been in like an interesting space with Eddie for quite a while, where it's like he's like mad at him, but he loves him. You know, where it's a very like ambiguous, like Eddie just kind of isn't cooperating with being nice to anyone.
Well, for a while I really thought like, I was like, maybe this is going somewhere. But then when he was happy for him, when he won the Connie, I was like, I think that like, I don't know, like not that their relationship could never have ups and downs again, but that like the baseline is just like, you drive me fucking crazy, but I'm in it with you forever. Ride or die.
Yeah. Yeah.
100%. Absolutely. Ride or die. All right, and then let's move on to our final topic. Orange Cassidy got a little backstage promo this week in which he told Renee that four very strange men will be fighting each other for the honor of fighting him on Dynamite next week. He delivered this information.
He said he wanted Tony Khan to gather like some of his friends and his enemies and some of his friends' sort of enemies, but like then the list of men was just like, oh.
Men.
Like,
it's just men. You know what you could have said? I asked Tony Khan to gather some men to fight.
Like the randomest group he could find with little to no relationship with me. I mean, Kip Sabian and the Butcher, like, sure, but...
You could have just said, Tony, could I get a pick and mix of men? That's what I'm looking for.
Tony, just pick them out of a hat. Who gives a shit?
I like it's like the opposite of Guard sees them. He's like sitting back in the throne like, Tony, bring me some men.
Bring me men. Bring me men and let's make merry. Later, OC also came out with, he came out for Greg's match versus Wardlow. So this was Greg / Trent with OC, Chuck, and Rocky ringside along with Adam Cole and the Kingdom ringside for Wardlow. Wardlow did win. Well, no. You know what? Let's start here. Greg was wearing his bib again. Can we talk about Greg's bib?
Why? Why does he wear that?
It's like he's cut.
It's so crazy.
He's been cutting the tank top like down and down and down to show off his arms and shoulders until like it doesn't connect anymore. And now it just flops around. But why?
It looks like a garment that he only wears like that he only owns so he can wear it when his mom is giving him a haircut so he doesn't get hair on his neck. Like that's the only. Why is this happening? Greg, I love you so much. I'd die for you. Why are you wearing a bib every week on live TV? It's so funny. Look, and it's the neck is still so tight. Like often when they trim their shirts, like to make a tank, like Dustin loves to do that low neck. So it's just like your nips out. I mean, I wish I saw it more, Dustin, to be honest. I'd love to see your nipple a little more, but, Greg, it's still that tight little neckline. And then it's just flapping in the wind.
And why? To wear it once might be an accident, but twice seems like carelessness, you know?
So true, Oscar. Yeah, so we don't know why Greg is arraying himself that way, but then he lost to Wardlow. And now, Leah, do you want to read what your man said this week?
It wasn't my lover Eric Beeson. It was the B player. Who's completely, you know,
nothing
normal
to you.
No, he's nothing to me. But he did make me extremely angry because this quote, like I like stopped dead and was like, what the fuck? Even though Wardlow had a huge power advantage, he also had the upper hand outside the ring with the entire Undisputed Kingdom by his side. all Beretta had was an injured Chuck Taylor, Rocky Romero, and Orange Cassidy for backup. Okay, Adam Cole is also injured.
Adam Cole is more injured than Dustin. Dustin doesn't have a little splint on his foot.
He wasn't even pretending to limp this week. Yeah.
Go to hell. This is degradating.
Incredible hell.
I mean, the fact that Greg had to lose to Wardlow at all, it's like, and this on top of it, give me a break.
It's honestly, it's sickening because Manolo also was talking about this and being like, and that really built Wardlow up as a power player and like blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, to be honest, Wardlow is always having to be built and never building himself. I'm sorry, not to be cruel, but Greg is actually one of Tony Khan's specialist boys. Yeah. And I don't
think
he's
had half the chances that Wardlow has, and he does way more with the chances
he's made
he does
the most
get.
Of them. I don't think he should ever have lost to a nasty little beef man like Wardlow. But he did. And then Wardlow immediately began body slamming him, which is, again, offensive. And like, he doesn't respect Greg. It's disrespectful. Mm-hmm. So then everyone had to slide into the ring. Orange Cassidy, injured Chuck Taylor, Rocky Romero, who goes here full time now. They're all going to slide into the ring to get Wardlow.
Do you feel like it's like you're playing with the neighbor kids, but like the next door neighbor, like their cousin is just in town, like kind of a lot. And you don't understand like why he's here so much. And, but like no one ever is like, oh, you know, Rocky's going to be here. It's just like, he just shows up. And you're like,
it's
okay.
At a certain point, you're like, does Rocky have a bedroom in this house? Right. Does Rocky live here? And then you're not like, supposed to ask questions like that for some reason.
It's like, is something going on with Rocky's parents? Like, is it on the rocks? Like,
from
are
what
they...
I've heard, the answer is yes. The answer is that quite a lot's been going on with Rocky's parents over
been
in
having
Japan.
Some issues. Yeah, it's
having
trouble.
Some issues. All right. So then they had to kind of scare him off. And then Greg was really, really mad, which is understandable, Greggy. Yeah. Honestly, we're really mad too. He's really mad that he lost to Wardlow. So he did push Orange Cassidy. And so my recapper, Manolo, said, one thing to keep an eye on, Trent shoved Orange Cassidy out of frustration after the match. Best friend squashed the incident, but this is another breadcrumb on the trail of tension from Trent. I want to say something. If I were following breadcrumbs from a member of Best Friends, like into the woods trying to get somewhere, the place I would get is...
lost.
Like nowhere. Lost.
Yeah.
Because the other side of the woods, no way. I'd be in a pit.
One breadcrumb for every like quarter mile. And also the lesson of breadcrumbs is that they're not a good trail because the birds eat them. You gotta use rocks.
And it is like sometimes you'd be like, I found a breadcrumb, and then you look at it later, you're like, that was an acorn. That was not bread.
I think someone else was just eating
an acorn
here. Yeah,
that was a
kush ball. Dustin's eating a baguette in a promo for some reason. Some crumbs fell, but it wasn't meaningful crumbs.
Dustin later, he's so like, can't believe how stupid you are. He's just like, you followed my crumb. I was eating a sandwich. I was just having a sandwich. Like, you shouldn't follow that. Eating a sandwich, then threw the sandwich away. Birds ate the sandwich. They take the crumbs places.
And now you're mad you just got led to a trash can? Like, okay, I don't think that's my fault.
Why would you follow me into the forest? What's wrong with you? I didn't ask you to follow me in the forest. In fact, I tried to run away.
We're like, because we like you, he says, don't. Stop.
I have done everything I can to discourage you from following me into this forest.
Girls, I can't be more clear. I'm not interested in having fans, okay?
And I don't know why he wouldn't be interested. When we say the kind of beautiful things that we say about him and his body and what we think about it, I don't see why he wouldn't welcome that into his life.
This week on ONR, James is like, I'm sorry to the Tunnel Talk girls, but I have to say this.
No.
Best friends are never going to get a belt. And I was like, of course they're never going to get a belt.
James, of course we know that.
Don't you think we live with the indignity of that knowledge every day?
Every day
don't
we
you think
wake
that we
up.
Live with it every day.
We wake up and we open our eyes and we know they will never get a belt. And then we just have to go to work.
What choice do we have but to still say things like give best friends the belts? We know that that would usher in a utopia, a golden age that would never had never been seen before, would never be seen again. We know that that would fix everything. We know it
would
fix everything. We know it won't happen.
It
will never happen.
Everyone would be like, the feeling's back. The ratings would be incredible. Merch sales, ticket sales.
Morale backstage would be at an all-time high. And morale in my home? Through the roof.
Through the roof.
It wouldn't be the bleak midwinter here anymore. It would be the party summer, baby. I'm dancing.
It would be It would be summer health, of my mental health, yeah.
The dopamine levels would be 10 times any cold shower we could ever take.
Dopamine. Serotonin. Blasting the roof off.
It would be capturing
we'd
a
be
bat
medicated,
in a Tupperware every day.
Capturing
we'd
a bat
in a Tupperware. It'd be sending a message to your work team to say, hey guys, sorry, I'm going to miss our 1 p.m. meeting with Sebastian. I have to drive a lab bat in Tupperware to the health department, which is some message I sent yesterday.
It would be like that every minute
every
of every day.
Every day.
But we know it never will be.
It never
Don't
will
be cruel to us. Be kind to us.
Don't be Tell cruel. Us, girls, you know, someday, maybe.
Yeah, James. Tell us maybe someday.
Hey, James, could you just say to us, I won't move the football this time. I won't take the football away this time, girls. I'll let you kick it this time. We'll believe you. Yeah. Let us believe you.
That's all we have.
My God.
Those
anyway.
Moments before the football gets chipped away. Those are precious moments for us.
They move so slow. Luxuriously slow. You think everything is going to be okay. Jenny Holzer is right. You can go along for so long in those moments. Okay. Anyway, do you think best friends are going to heel turn? Do you think that this is the only thing I want to say, actually, okay? Every single member of Best Friends has given us heel turn vibes that some recap or whatever has been like, keep your eye on. At some point in the past 2 years, Orange Cassidy, corrupted by the bell. Trent, corrupted by being annoyed at Orange Cassidy. Dustin just likes having a chainsaw in his hands. Chris is being seduced by Stokely Hathaway. Of course, this team could heel turn. Should we be reading anything into anything they do, A? And if, no, okay. All I want to say is that it should, all for one and one for all, okay? I don't want to see any member of this group turning on the other members of this group and doing something without them. Yes. I want to see you sit down and you have a group vote. We're going to be bad guys or we're going to be good guys. If you're bad guys, you're allowed to push each other and be mean to each other more than you are now. You do not break up this group.
Yeah. You my get Barry Bloom together. You negotiate.
Thread.
Yeah. If best friends breaks up for any reason, we are the bat.
We're out.
We're in the, we're out. We're
the bat in the toilet.
That'll be the last fucking straw.
We're in a tub.
You are tuning
driven.
In to a supernatural Bible podcast from then on, because that is the end for me.
A supernatural Bible podcast would be so funny.
It's just me telling you guys plots of supernatural.
Like the ones that relate to like when they go to war on God or whatever. Yeah. And then I'm like, here's a Bible passage that's sort of related. And then we discuss that.
That would be helpful because I've read a lot of things about supernatural where I didn't understand if they made it up or if it was from the Bible. Anyway, so at the end of the day, Wardlow sucks. Never break up, best friend. They can turn heel if they want to. They can do anything they want to. They can, I mean, they could kill a man. Is that, no, they can't kill anyone.
Are you at? No, I think they could. That'd be fine.
Okay, great.
They can kill Brandon Cutler.
Yeah.
Remember? They can kill Brandon Cutler. They can do anything they want. Don't break them up. That's all. That's all I got to say. You know what? At this stage in the game, if they're just eating sandwiches and it doesn't go anywhere, that's fine. We're so limp to it at this point.
I mean, I was just happy that they all came out to support Greg and his match, because so often lately it's been like OC coming out with like Hook for no reason and you're just like, okay, cool. I'll just go die then. That's fine.
This is so troubling. I completely missed Orange Cassidy. Like at a certain point I was like, when did he get out there? And everyone was like, he came out with them. I was like, I didn't see him.
I was rewatching stuff and I looked because you had said that. And actually he like, when he comes out, he's kind of like the angle, like he's blocked by like Greg's body and then because he's kind of behind them. So he wasn't.
That's
super
good to
visible.
Hear. That makes me feel better. Okay, well, my energy levels got so high for a minute.
know, it's, hard to, there. It's hard to wrap things up at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. Woo. Did I fail to bring up anything you really want to talk about?
What do you think Dustin would do with a bat in the house?
Oh my God. I think he'd
shriek,
non-zero chance he'd make someone else deal with it.
Yeah.
Can't you see that?
Probably OC.
he, like they're not living together anymore, but he'd call OC and be like, hey, I've got a real situation over here.
There's a bat in the toilet.
There's a bat in the toilet. So
do you think Dustin would ever mislead someone, like would mislead Orange Cassidy to get him over to deal with the bat? Like, would he say something like, I have a present for you, or I just want to hang out really bad. And then when OC gets over there, it's just like, there's bat in the toilet.
And then later,
you to deal with the bat. Right.
Yeah, we can totally play Settlers of Catan, but could you take a look at something for me in the bathroom?
And then later, when they're telling this story to someone else, OC is like, yeah, and he got me over here under false premises. And Dustin is like completely unrepentant. He's like,
well, what was I going to do?
What was I going to do with that bat?
There's a bat.
What was I going to do? I love the idea. I would love to get to listen to Chuck Taylor be like, the one thing I miss about living with OC, built-in bat control. Built-in bat control.
He did make me get tested for rabies, but he doesn't care the bats.
I think that OC, real life OC, I think he would make Dustin get tested for rabies.
Yeah.
Like, install something in his house, like a bidet.
Yeah.
Well, I have a bidet as well, actually, and they're very luxurious.
And did you get Orange Cassidy to install that?
I installed it myself, actually.
Wow. She's a powerful woman.
I don't have OC on speed dial, so I installed it myself, actually.
It's like I had to take care of that bat myself. I would have loved to call OC to come take care of it.
Oh, my God. We'd all love to call OC. Unfortunately, Chuck Taylor's the only one who's allowed to call OC to come deal with a bat in his toilet. So on that note, I've been Allie.
I've been Anne.
And I've been Leah.
This is really tunnel talk.
I think this was the most tunnel talk episode in a long time.
This was the tunnelist talk. Our theme is by Chris Gorkin. You can find us on Twitter at Tunnel Talk Pod, Tumblr Tunnel Talk Pod, via email tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. You can find us on our channel on the Social Suplex Discord. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on the Social Suplex Network feed or wherever you, well, that would be also on your podcast. So just subscribe to us somewhere, wherever you find us. If you Google us, you'll find us. Subscribe to us there and come back next week.